Welcome back to episode 3 of the Verde Podcast. Every week we talk to local business leaders and entrepreneurs to understand the real story that doesn't make it to the spotlight, but is how actual businesses are actually built to succeed. Today we have Chuck Matthews, who is the founder of Matthews Fan Company.
Chuck is a super interesting guy that I met this year and I've really got a lot of respect for. And when I started the podcast idea, he was one of the first ones I thought of. Since he's grown a very interesting business that involves international import and has grown it pretty successfully by himself since the beginning. So, Chuck, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, good, good. Glad to have you. So we just always start off with kind of tell me a little bit about your business, when you started it, what you guys do, and give me kind of the background up until today.
Sure. In 1986, I was gifted a Christmas trip to visit a friend down in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And on that trip, I noticed an interesting ceiling fan that was sort of rotating and vibrating and making some funky noises above my head in a little cafe. And said to my friend, "That's a really interesting fixture. It had a central sphere, and then on the ends of those spheres, it had two fan heads, two small fan heads, roughly about 12 inches in diameter, and they were rotating, and the whole fan was rotating about its axis. And had never seen anything like it before. And my friend said, a friend of mine's family makes those, and they make them out of a little garage facility down in the southern part of Sao Paulo. Perhaps you'll meet Claudia this evening. A bunch of us are getting together and meeting at a little cafe called Singapore." So that evening, I did meet Claudia. We became friends, and she invited me to tour her small facility, which consisted of just a couple of desks, a little office, and a couple of workstations in this garage behind. There, she and her family had been making these very unique ceiling fans since about 1962. And so on a subsequent trip down to Brazil in a couple of years later, I purchased a fan, put it up on my ceiling, and people liked it. I didn't think that I had any sort of business. I just thought maybe I could create a hobby, an interesting hobby, whereby I could import a few fans and sell a few fans and then return and visit my friends in Brazil. And that's sort of how the business proceeded up until about 1999. So roughly about 8 years or so, it was a hobby, then a hobby out of control that commanded a lot of my attention. So from my day job, I was finding myself having to go back to my warehouse and put together, or back to my home into the root cellar of the house that I was renting, and put together fans and then call UPS at midnight and say, okay, pick these up tomorrow, pile them up in my foyer of this building, this house I was renting. And UPS would come by and pick up these few fans and take my check that was taped to the front. And meanwhile, I'd hope that no one would come into the foyer and steal the fans.
Sure.
So that happened up till 1999. And about 1999 was the turning point. It was a hobby out of control, and then a real imposition. So I thought, either I turn this into a business or I have to abandon it. And so I started to do my own designing, and I released two additional models other than the original first model in year 2000. And by August of 2000, it had become a sufficient enough business to support me. And so from 2000, I've been fully self-employed. And that's when Matthews Fan Company was fully born. We're incorporated since 1992, but 8 years of do I want to do this? Am I a fan man? I really didn't have the identity.
Yeah.
Because my parents would, refer to me as the fan man, and I was like, I'm not a fan man. I'm just a guy producing fans. And I suppose that was somewhat evident in the specs of our product too. And we were producing downrods, the rods from which the fans hang in 10-inch increments rather than 12-inch, which is what every other fan company does. Mm-hmm. So we're doing things that no one else was doing. And me, that was good, because it certainly differentiated us from the competition. Mm-hmm. This year we celebrate our 25th anniversary from our founding in 1992. Thank you.
Yeah. And where do people find your fans typically?
So they find them in local bricks and mortar showrooms, and they also find them online. So we have a few designated online purveyors which do a pretty good job with their product.
Okay, let me know some of those, and I'll make sure to include it in the podcast link. So
sure.
Well, cool. Well, I love that story, and I know you and I have talked about, you know, trips to China and how that goes, it sounds like you've got a bit of a passion around fans, which is probably not most fan companies have someone leading with the pure passion, so that's awesome. Tell me a little bit of what are your favorite parts about running your business, and what do you look forward to coming into work on Monday to do?
So I think what I found most exciting about it used to be the production of a product from idea inception to actual product, and then seeing it actually sold at a lighting showroom. Then it really became the international importing and then exporting of said product. I do have a passion for import and export. Mm-hmm. We source products still from Brazil. We now also source product from China. In the past, we've sourced lighting products from Bulgaria, and we do bring in some product from Taiwan also. And that's fun. But we distribute product in Australia. We distribute product in Vietnam, in Singapore, in Hong Kong, throughout Europe. And we've got a couple of small distributorships that we're working on down in South America also.
Cool.
So that's fun. But I really must say that the most gratifying thing for me today is would be the opportunities that we're offering some of our young employees. We're a relatively young company. Bringing in raw talent and turning it into something really positive to me is most exciting.
Cool.
So it's not about me anymore. It's really about my employees.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a good quality in a leader that wants to build a business for a long time. That's for sure. So it's hard to retain talent.
It is. And you go through a lot of, as any small business owner will probably attest, is that you hire an employee and sometimes you wish you didn't hire that one employee, but you become dependent upon that employee because you're so because you're so small that, you know, if one person doesn't come in, if you have two employees and one doesn't come in, that means you've lost 50% of your workforce.
Yeah.
So relatively speaking, you're sort of desperate in that respect. So you need to retain that one employee, even though he might drive you crazy or she might drive you nuts.
Yeah.
Perhaps maybe I'm just more forgiving than most. But we've got a great group now. We're larger than we've ever been, and we've got the best group we've ever had.
That's great. My experience is like the investment you put into training people, you don't realize when you get started. And then after you hire a couple people and you realize you put 6 months into someone, you realize how precious that time is more than anything else, you know.
Oh yes. Yeah, and then, you know, and it's not the training. Sometimes it's trust. It's trust, yeah, that you place in that individual. Sometimes it's misplaced, and if there are errors, those errors add up and they cost money.
Yeah.
You can certainly forgive an error, and you can forgive a repetitive error. But if there's no attempt to change the scope of your daily activity and to try and eliminate those errors, you've got a problem with that particular employee.
Yeah. Unless you're the owner, then you and I can make mistakes all day long and never have to change, right?
Of course. Of course. And I try and cover those up as best I can.
Yes.
But it's only because, you know, I've got so many hands in which to juggle those many, many balls.
Well, so people in my company love to know that if there's a mistake, usually trace it back, it's probably my fault. But that's within our company. Not everyone's the same. So.
I've certainly been known to make a few mistakes here and there.
So tell me a little bit about...
That's why I'm so forgiving.
I actually think that's a really important quality of an owner, is that to be forgiving is, if you can't forgive yourself or your mistakes, you're not going to forgive people around you.
I had a boss once where, my memory's pretty good, you know, and I had him tell me once, well, I have a photographic memory, and so I know that what you're telling me right now, which I don't recall, is not correct, because my memory is infallible, and it's perfect. And I'm thinking, you're crazy, because I know for a fact what happened is what happened, and
yeah.
So I think knowing that I'm fallible allows me to accept fallibility in others. But what I don't accept is a sort of a nonchalant attitude towards towards errors, yeah, and towards fallibility. I mean, if you're not trying to improve yourself, well, then, I mean, I'm trying to improve myself daily.
Yeah.
Am I meeting all those demands that I place on myself? Oh, of course not. Right. But at least I'm trying.
The hardest thing when someone doesn't own up to a mistake. That's what you can't drive change without someone accepting it and moving on.
Well, accepting it, and then, I mean, if you can get beyond the defensive thing, that can be a challenge.
It sure can. Tell me a little bit about the hardest time you recall at your company in the 25 years. Is there a specific, you know?
Sure. I mean, we'd always increased in sales from inception in 1992 to 2000, from when we really started to grow in year 2000 up until 2007 when we ran into the worst recession since the 1970s. And at that time, of course, we had our set expenses. And as you're trudging along into the year and you're realizing that your sales are decreasing and your expenses have kept up with you as they'd always been, you start accumulating debt. And that was probably the hardest time was when we lost about 50% of our business during the Great Recession. Hmm. We accumulated a lot of debt. But fortunately at that time we had made the decision to start procuring product and manufacturing product in China. So before that, we were strictly the handmade, very expensive, distinctly handmade product that we produce in Brazil. As those very expensive, very costly, but very quality fans, the sales of those were declining in the marketplace. We introduced a middle market product from China, which is mass produced, and those sales were increasing. So it was sort of a hockey puck where the expensive product was decreasing in sales, and that new product they were introducing, which is less costly and more for the economy conscious consumer, that product was actually increasing in demand. And so that saved us.
Do you think if you hadn't introduced that new line, you would have probably not survived that?
We would not have survived.
That's crazy.
No. Yeah, I'm pretty confident of that.
Yeah.
And we certainly wouldn't be where we are today. We would be the same company we were prior. I mean, had we survived, we would have had to. During the recession, we only laid off one employee. He was one of the most recent hires, and he wasn't laid off. His hours were just decreased, and that was only for a few months. And that was only during the winter months. And so we were able to really survive intact, though we took on a lot of debt. But that debt was paid off incrementally over the next couple of years.
You had a good vision where you knew the debt was worth taking on at the time, and.
Well, actually, I sort of didn't have a choice because I didn't know what was happening.
Yeah, right.
Like you're just kind of scratching your head, like, okay, so I know the economy's melting down, but how does that affect me? You know,
right. Hindsight's 20/20.
Is this really going to affect me?
You know? Yeah.
And then, but you're like, okay, how long is this going to last? You know, and again, you don't know that a recession is happening until you've had a quarter of bad growth.
Right.
And okay, so I could see that my growth was of course bad for the last quarter, but. Until it's official, you know, you don't know if it's systemic.
Yeah.
And it ended up being systemic.
Yeah.
It was a rough time.
Yeah.
But we pulled through.
Yeah. So my last question for you is kind of why I do this. You know, you and I met, we were introduced through our mutual insurance broker. He's a good guy, Craig.
Yes, Craig.
And, you had in the past done some work in one of your businesses to reduce energy. I think you had participated in the energy efficiency program.
At our other facility up the street, yes, about 4 or 5 years ago. It was a good time because all of our old fluorescent fixtures were dying, our high bays were dying.
Right.
And so we heard about the program whereby we could not only save energy, but have all those really old fixtures replaced, which are starting to fail anyway. In fact, I wish that I'd had them in 2 years prior because I'd already replaced half the ballast in those other lamps.
Right.
In those other fixtures. So that was a few years back. I'd say 3-4 years ago. And then we're thinking that perhaps because we had high bays here in this new facility right up the street, which were failing or failed, and we thought it might be a good time, opportunity for us to repeat the same measure.
So really the driving motivation for energy efficiency work was that the long-term maintenance on LED is much less than what you currently had, and you knew that they would have to take a lot of ongoing maintenance to keep them going.
Well, yes, because in our prior facility, of which we replaced all those high bays 4 or 5 years ago, we had the same high bays here. Those mercury
400-watt metal halides.
Yeah, there you go. All right. LED is the new generation, and of course these dim on their own. I can see the ones dimming out there in the outside office. So they dim, and they all. What I also liked about it is they all become security lights. So when I walk into the building, and if I have to come in because there's an emergency or something's happening, or the employees are coming in the morning, and at 6 o'clock in the morning and everything's dark, the lights will come on by themselves, and no one has to fumble around for a switch. In the past, we had to walk that long dark corridor. Through the warehouse and flip breakers. So for us, it was a no-brainer in that it brought security to the building, it brought safety to the employees, and it brought us energy savings. Okay. And light, because we were losing high bays. The high bays were dying.
Yeah, so the old lights were kind of dimming as over time.
They were not only dimming, but they were dead. There were a few that were dead.
Yeah. Well, cool. And I love that. I love that there's a lot of reasons people do. That's why I love interviewing customers, because there's 500 different reasons people do it. And it doesn't all come down to ROI. It doesn't all come down to saving the earth. And I think that's a great, valid point that really drives a lot of decisions.
With most businesses, I mean, I think there's going to be a selfish drive to make certain decisions. But at the same time, sometimes those selfish drives are actually good for the economy at large, but also the earth.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Chuck.
You're very welcome.
Great talking to you, and I look forward to seeing you again.
Perfect. Thank you.